Well, here we are, off to another year, aren't we? I don't know whether it's old age or what, but the feast just seems to go quicker and quicker every year. It just seems the other day we were all starting the feast off, and now it's all finished, and, you know, shortly most of us are going to be going home tomorrow, I guess. If you want a title, you write down Onward to 2018. Who thought we'd be saying that 40, 50 years ago? As the end of this year draws to a close and 2018 soon to be upon us, let's take a look at the world today and see how the prophecies of the Bible actually fill our daily news. Might I add, as never before. Matthew 24, if you want to turn there, you can read it. You should know by heart this particular few verses. Around 2,000 years ago, Christ warned us what to watch for. And Jesus said to them, verse 4, "Take heed that no man deceive you." You know, when you're trying to get a point across to people, the two things you watch for are the first and the last thing they say. Those are what's really important. The first thing he's saying is, this is what you've really, really got to watch for, is deception. Well, look at the news. I mean, a classic example is 9/11. That was a few years ago now. We're not experts on these matters, but what I and many others saw that was on the actual TV, it seemed a bit rigged. Now, let me explain. Having been involved in the news, I'll let you know it actually goes behind the scenes. When somebody wants to give a keynote speech, like the Prime Minister, for instance, the speech is released to the press with an embargo on it that they cannot use it until after the speech is given. But it gives them time to have a quick read over and to get some idea as to the tack they're going to take in the actual article. And, you know, you jump that embargo and you're out of it. You're fired. But I was at work that day, and we saw live on TV a BBC reporter standing with the burning Twin Towers in the background, giving us the news that building number 7, right next to the Twin Towers, had collapsed due to intense heat from the conflagration of these two great buildings. Engineers have since said that this was actually impossible. Heat could not possibly have caused the building to collapse, as a matter of interest. But I've got an even more convincing thing to tell you. This lady was sitting there spouting off about how terrible it was, etc., etc., etc. And it was horrible. But the building was still standing. It was still standing behind her. Because I said to the people, that's the building the FBI got the officers in. And with that, the building went down with a controlled explosion. There is no argument about that. When they explode a building, they blow out the supports. And the top of the building literally free falls, straight down. It doesn't just slowly crumble, crumble, crumble. And if you remember 9/11, those two big towers, they came down in free fall. It raises a few questions. So the reporter was actually giving the news before the event actually happened. In other words, she'd been told that building was going to collapse, and she broke the embargo. The item, of course, was pulled and wasn't shown in the evening news. How about the latest thing, this shooting in Las Vegas? False flag attack? Well, Mike Adams, the health ranger, who's normally a pretty sort of reliable sort of chappy, he says, after a detailed forensic acoustics analysis rooted in science and physics, I have affirmatively identified the range and the distance of a second shooter in the massacre. And he provides proof. He shows you can hear two guns going off at the same time. One person claimed they were shot by somebody inside the actual arena with a pistol. Now, a new video has emerged from the night at Las Vegas shooting that appears to show clearly overlapping gunfire coming from different directions, which contradicts the mainstream narrative of what occurred on the night 59 people were killed and over 500 injured. Horrific. This guy was shooting at a range of about 400 meters. 400 yards. The second shooter was obviously very much closer. And there may even have been a third shooter. And also there are rumors that the gates to the concert were locked, so people couldn't get out. Some people claimed that the police had taken their cell phones and erased everything on it to do with that they'd recorded during the actual incident. So the question I've got for you is, what is the truth? Answers on a postcard. No, don't bother. Don't bother. What is the truth? 9/11, by the way, just another small fact. When they explode these buildings, you know, they demolish old buildings all the time, the pile of rubble is normally about 10% the height of the original building. So if you've got a building that's 100 stories high and you blow it up, the pile of rubble should be around about 10 stories high. If you remember the photographs, it showed the portico into the building as being the highest point left, and that was 3 stories high. So what happened there? The whole thing's a mystery. The whole thing is an absolute mystery. One day, of course, the truth's going to come out. But what I'm pointing out is this. We are being deceived on a daily basis. You've only got to look at some of the computer finagling they can do these days. They can do it almost live. Very difficult to sort out the truth from the lies. All right, Matthew 24, verse 6. And you'll hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. Notice that bit. We tend to read over that. See that you be not troubled. For these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. What God, Christ is saying here is, this is in my plan, guys. Get it. It's going to happen. And don't get all upset about it. Don't get all upset about it. Now, North Korea, this is obviously one war and rumor of war, isn't it? But what's the real story with North Korea? It's not what it seems. It's not what it seems. North Korea could not exist without the support of China. Something like 90% of all the trade is between the two countries. China could just go like that and North Korea would be finished. No food, no fuel, nothing. Here's the thing. China has claimed sovereignty over the whole China Sea, which goes right the way down into the Philippines area, across to Vietnam, and that whole area. They claim sovereignty of all that ocean, which is rubbish. They can't do that under international law. And they're patrolling that area with ships and so forth and so on. And, of course, America, quite rightly, has gone up there with a show of force. And they've sailed ships up there and made it quite obvious that, hey, we're not giving you sovereignty over this area. So what you're actually seeing there is a proxy war between China and America. North Korea is the ploy. They're the victim. They're the one that are being used or abused. The problem is China. They don't want an open war. So what they do is they'll psych up the North Koreans and get them to create all this fear and dread, forcing America to commit more. And knowing Mr. Trump, he ain't going to back down. He ain't going to back down. Not one bit. He's already sent another. The biggest nuclear submarine they've got is a humongous thing. That's already on its way up there already. He sent another couple of nuclear warships up there. Guam is just a floating aircraft carrier. It's full of all the latest weaponry they've got. And the missiles. And, of course, this is winding America up. It's also costing America a lot of money. You know, to operate one decent-sized helicopter costs something like £20,000 an hour. Not just fuel. Helicopters, the blades, where the blades attach to the center part, that's very complex because those blades go around, but they also alter their pitch. So you can imagine how complex that top part in a helicopter. They've got to be changed every so many hours at a great expense, obviously. It's a very piece of high-precision engineering. And the jets, they've got to fly, they've got to be maintained, they've got to use fuel. What is costing them, I'd love to know what the actual price is costing America at the moment, just to keep all those bombers and missiles and ships and all the rest of it in that area. It's crippling them. But don't worry, we'll just print some more money. And don't be fooled, Mr. Trump's doing that as well. They've got to. They're in a downward spiral which they cannot get out of. And that's one of the biggest problems. So you've got China involved with the proxy war with the USA. One missile hitting a US target could change the world as we know it. Mr. What's-his-name in Northern Korea has threatened to send a whole salvo of missiles down towards Guam. One of them gets through. Just one of them gets through. The cost in physical money to America will probably run into $1 trillion or so. For the loss of all the equipment and all the rest of it down there. And what will America then do? And what will China then do? It's a what if, what if, what if. You see, it's wars and rumors of wars. You can't tie it down, can you? But you can see it, it's bubbling, it's fermenting. It's creating an atmosphere of uncertainty with people in the world. Now we come to Iran. President Obama, pushed through this peace treaty, nuclear treaty type thing with them, where they wouldn't be allowed to make atomic weapons for a period of 10 years, I believe. That's all. What's 10 years in the life of the world? The rest of the countries signed the agreement. Mr. Trump's come along and said, that was the worst agreement America's ever made with anybody, and I'm going to sort it out, scrap it. So what he's done, it's the thing that in this morning's newspaper, as a first step, Mr. Trump refused to certify to Congress under a U.S. law that Iran was complying with his obligations under the nuclear agreement, charging that the country had violated the terms of the deal, what it has, it launched missiles, which it wasn't allowed to do. Going further, Mr. Trump said in his efforts to address his concerns fall short, he would terminate the accord. And he quote, Iran is under the control of a fanatical regime, Mr. Trump said in a speech to the White House, adding it spread death, destruction, and chaos all around the world. So what's brewing there is we could well see sanctions being placed back on Iran. And what's that going to do? Because you see, Iran is involved with Russia in the next little story we're going to look at, and that's Syria. Russia is backing Iran and supporting the Assad regime in Syria, whereas the Americans and the British and Saudi Arabia and a few other nations want Assad out. You see? And it's terrible. This Mr. Assad is so horrible. What's the story? The story is they wanted to put a pipeline up through Syria, and America didn't want that because America is selling a whole lot of gas and oil now to Europe. You see? Russia? No. America. America is selling to them, yes. Russia is as well, but this is the point. The Americans want to make sure they've got all this excess stuff now, and they want it going to Europe, and the Europeans don't want it. They want from Russia. But then it's a case of, you know, do you want a heart attack or a stroke? I mean, both those nations aren't trustworthy, are they? Everybody's involved in Syria. They've leveled Syria. Half the country is flat. There are 400,000 some people being killed. The normal way of life is totally eradicated. This is just up the road from Israel, by the way. Don't forget, Israel's border of Golan Heights is with Syria. And then you get, of course, a drugs war in the Philippines. Several thousand people are being indiscriminately shot there. Rightly or wrongly, you know, it's a real heavy-handed approach to take to things. Maybe it's the best thing for the country, who knows? But nevertheless, it creates tension, it creates uncertainty, it creates fear. And of course, North Africa is shambolic, all along North Africa, particularly Libya. You know, the Americans went down and got rid of Mr. Gaddafi, and for whatever he was, like Saddam Hussein. When Saddam Hussein was running Iraq, Iraq was a prosperous country. People were happy, children went to school, hospitals worked, roads worked. They got rid of Saddam Hussein and the whole place imploded. It's a mess. They did the same thing in Libya. Now half the country's divided, I think, between two or even three different terrorist groups. And in the meantime, they're shipping as many people as they can up into Italy to invade Europe. We call them refugees. Oh, shame, we've got to take them, says Mrs. Merkel. And that, in turn, has inflamed the situation in Germany now, brought the right wing back into the picture. You've got to wonder if this is deliberate. You've got to wonder if this is deliberate. Remember what Mr. Armstrong wrote about the Nazis going underground? And at the right time, they would come up? Is this the right time? Well, it sure looks like it. It sure looks like it. You've got to keep in mind the three biggest trading nations on the face of this planet are America, China, and Germany. And they oscillate, they alternate for the top position every year. Little Germany produces as much in exports as the US or China in a given year. Think about that. The thing is with Germany, it's quality stuff. And people are buying their stuff because it's quality. We'll go into Germany a little bit. Nation shall rise against nation, verse 7, and kingdom against kingdom. We notice in the news at the moment, everybody's angry. It doesn't matter where you look. There's a whole bunch of people up in Scotland want to leave the United Kingdom. There's a bunch of people in Wales who want to leave the United Kingdom. There's a bunch of people in Northern Ireland who will fight anybody for anything, but they're not sure where they want to be. Crazy. Spain and Catalonia, in the news recently. Big, big problem there. And in some areas of Italy also want self-government. You see, these are the areas where the money is. Right? Catalonia is a rich area. Barcelona thinks that sort of area. Very, very wealthy, producing a lot of money. And they're seeing this money going into a melting pot, which subsidizes the poorer regions. Italy's the same. South of Italy is terribly poor, subsidized tremendously by the north of Italy, which is all industrial, you know, up in Turin and all that area. But the people who are doing all, they're getting a bit fed up. See, all our tax money is going to get these guys, and they're sitting down there in the sun enjoying themselves. Yeah. In Greece, of course, the situation is pretty much the same. The situation in Greece, I thought, was rather pathetic because they were going on about being broke. The biggest importer of Porsche motor cars is Greece. Bought for cash. Nobody pays tax in Greece. You go into a shop and you show them a credit card, the guy laughs at you. Because you've got to pay tax when you pay a credit card, it's recorded. But otherwise, you take off the 20% or whatever it is. They're open about it. It's blatant. Blatant corruption. And the rest of Europe is fed up with this. It's causing more stress, more strife. But they can't just dump Greece because it's part of the European Union. Bonkers. Europe itself is in a mess. Poland now wants to leave. Hungary is making noises about leaving. And one or two of the other nations are saying, we don't want this. We don't want these wretched people coming in. We don't want this Muslim invasion. And quite rightly, too. Britain's population has increased 10% over the last 10 years. 6 million people. Our hospital wards are cluttered with Muslim women producing more babies. They produce one every year. You've got young children right now, by the time they get into their 50s, they'll be living in a Muslim nation. Not just here, but in America as well. If things were to go on. It's horrendous what these people are doing. Their way of life is just different to ours. It's certainly not God's way. Matthew 24, verse 7, there shall be famines and pestilences, earthquakes in diverse places. Well, let's do some famines. North Africa, right at this moment, the United Nations say that there are roughly 20 million people, that's a third of the population of Britain, need food. They're dying. They're in bad shape. No food because of drought and because of war. War causes famine. And what follows famine, of course, is pestilence. And, of course, you get all the dysenteries and all the other nasty things where, particularly the young children, they're dying by the thousands every single day. In fact, I think it's something like two or three every minute of every day. That's horrendous. And then, of course, we've got the pestilence, bubonic plague, the Black Death. Sheila, not long after we were married, we went up north to see her parents, and she took me across to a little village called Eam, up in the north of England, and we went into the cemetery there, and there are row after row after row of little gravestones, so-and-so age 5, so-and-so age 2, so-and-so age 7. All the children died, and most of the adults. Place was virtually wiped out. Bubonic plague. At the moment, they got bubonic plague in Madagascar. And there's, I think, 30 or 40 people already died, and several hundred in hospital. And this thing knocks you. And, you know, the strongest antibiotics are needed to try and combat this. And the United Nations has flown that down. What happens if this kind of thing happens in Europe or America or Britain? And in particularly America, I saw again in the news this morning, they just released figures to state that 40% of all Americans, that's 180 million Americans, are obese. Obese. And why are they obese? Because the food industry has been putting all sorts of rubbish into the food, especially enriched sugars, that the body can't actually use. They're too powerful. So it stores them. Glucose, fructose syrup and all that sort of stuff, corn syrup. They're deadly. They're not designed to be eaten by the human beings. But they're cheap. They can save probably save 10 cents on a whole crate of fizzy drinks by putting that stuff in because it's a little bit cheaper. And that's what it's all about, making money. The fact that you're killing the population off It doesn't seem to matter to anybody. Then there's man-made pestilence. Again, I saw this morning in the news. 25% of all Americans have an incurable sexually transmitted disease. Think about that. What's going on? I mean, I'm sorry, folks, in America, it's just, this is America. England, Britain, it's just as bad. And so are a lot of the Israelitish countries in Europe. In fact, some of them are worse. It's just the beginning. At any given time, there is an estimated 110 million cases of sexually transmitted infections being treated in people in the United States of America. It used to be a horrendous stigma if somebody got, say, syphilis. But now you'd just go to the doctor and ask Lucy, oh, you've got syphilis, yeah. Take the pills, go on. All right, 10 days, you'll be back to normal. And you can continue your way of life. It's sick. We've come to accept these things, which are curses placed on our nations for disobeying God's law. Seismos. Earthquakes. The word there is seismos or seismos. It means earthquakes, it means tsunamis, it means hurricanes. This week, this very week, La Palma volcano warning, Tenerife and Gran Canaria earthquake swarm as 50 quakes hit. They're small quakes, but the whole area around that, which is just one big volcano, well, it's two volcanoes actually, and you see the fields go up the side, little green patchwork quilt, and then the beaches are cluttered with people because it's a great tourist place. The weather's always nice. However, the one volcano blew, many years back now, and it's a typical cone, and there's a sort of a semicircle about a third, two-thirds of the way down, and it's slipped and stopped. Okay, now, with all our wonderful computers, we can measure how much rock slipped. Now, if you're sitting comfortably, it's round about 500 cubic kilometers, or if you want to work in a civilized measurement, which doesn't sound quite as bad, a mere 120 cubic miles. Right? A mile by a mile by a mile by a mile in all directions, and stack up 120 of them and slide them down into the ocean, and it goes straight down 2,000 odd feet into the sea. Can you imagine what's going to happen? You're going to see a tsunami. You're going to see a mega tsunami. It says, if this occurs, the eastern U.S. coast of America will be hit with a 100-foot, at least 100-foot tsunami, which is traveling at 400, 500, 600 miles an hour, depending on, you know, how quick the beach comes up. If the beach is shallow, then it gets worse because the water just builds up and it just shoots. That's what happened in Japan. Lifted a 7,000-ton ship and placed it on the top of a block of three-story high block of flats. Left it stranded there. This is power. The U.S. would have 7 hours warning. Can you imagine what would happen? Hello, folks. You've got 7 hours to get 200 miles inland and 500 feet above sea level, or you're all going to die. How many million people live on the eastern seaboard? And New York? How far above sea level is New York? Not very much. And all the other cities down the coastline there? Florida? They were worried about a storm surge the other day. Look what the storm surge did. Just wiped everything off. Just left a whole bunch of sand again. Think about 100 foot and coming in at that speed. It's crushed. And the worst part about it is, once it's done its stuff, and it's blown its thing, its power, and it stops, it then all goes back. And as it goes back, it just drags everything with it. And it just leaves bare ground. Absolutely bare ground. I mean, this is really horrific thing. Even Britain, certainly all along the South American coast, into the Gulf area, parts of Europe, Portugal, Spain, and so on, and of course parts of Africa, would all take between 10 and 20 meter tsunami. We just moved from the southeast. We were 15 feet above sea level. I feel a bit safer in Wales. We're 160, 170 feet above sea level. At least we can get a grandstand view. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But if it does, you know, the world's been very sad. God says you will rejoice because you know who's doing it. And you know why it's being done. And you know that it's bringing the end of this world now close. Just the last few weeks. September the 8th, magnitude 8.1 offshore Mexico. It was felt as far away from Mexico City, Guatemala City, 32 deaths, homes, schools, and hospitals damaged. Remember that? It was a whole, less than a month away. Yeah. Yes. September the 19th, less than a month ago, almost forgotten, 7.1 in magnitude in Mexico. Collapsed buildings, homes, bridges across hundreds of miles, 140 dead, and the reported death is still counting them, because still finding bodies even to this day. But you see, it was news then, it's gone. Far more important things have come up. Just in the last few days, 6.3 struck northern Chile. A huge earthquake hits Japan, right near Fukushima. Fiji was struck by a second earthquake. They had another one about a week before. Spain, 9 earthquakes recorded in southern Spain in one day. Now, some of these are not massive, but they shake. And again, guess people on edge. How would you feel if your house just started shaking, the lights start swinging, and the fridge door comes, everything falls on the floor? It doesn't do your nerves any good, does it? And that's what's happening. People are starting to lose it mentally. And when people are in that condition, especially the leaders, they make daft decisions, don't they? Mexico has just had a 5.61 just yesterday, I think it was. Another six magnitude hit Papua New Guinea. And there's a volcano eruption in southwestern Japan. All around the Ring of Fire, there's about 9 active volcanoes. The earth is shaking. The earth is shaking. There's been a 4.2 this morning off Japan. But now what they discovered is something I actually mentioned about 10 years ago on global warming. You know, the Pacific Ocean's kind of like big. It covers a large chunk of the earth. And you get La Nina and El Nino, and that affects world weather, right? And that's caused by the ocean being a bit hotter sometimes and a bit cooler. How do you heat that volume of water? Well, I know an easy way. Lots of volcanoes, thousands of them under the sea. Now, they've been doing some research, and they've, again, it was in the news this morning. Off Easter Island, just off Easter Island, they found 1,100 huge volcanoes, a mile and a half in the sea, spewing out magma, 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's just around Easter Island, rather the rest of the Pacific Ocean. See, the world, the Earth's crust is growing or shrinking, depending on which way the Earth is moving. And this brings volcanoes. And I'm talking to Philip about that, and he'd seen an article where there are little shrimps that live in these geysers, because obviously you get this terrific uprush of hot water. Little shrimps live in there, and because there's gold in the water, the gold sticks to them. And after a few years, they get such a heavy coating of gold on them, they can actually go deeper into the hot water to feed, but the younger ones can't. How do you think God in Christ designed this sort of crazy thing? So that we can go down and see and wonder. We can send a submersible down and just wonder and see these things. We know more about the moon than we do about the bottom of the ocean. We really do. Hurricanes, need I mention Harvey, Irma, Maria, Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, 14% of the people now have got electric back. 14%. Category 4 hurricanes, cause millions and, well, billions of dollars in damage. And again, America's got to foot the bill. See what's happening to America? They've got to maintain this vast army in the Far East. They've got this army in the Middle East. They've got all this lot here. Now we've got fire. Michael Schneider put an article in saying, another major disaster hits the U.S. A massive firestorm is burning tens of thousands of acres in Northern California. So far, at least 1,500 structures, it's now over 2,000, have been destroyed. At least 20,000 people have been evacuated, and 73,000 acres of forest acres have been burned. So far, another article mentioned 30 or 31 people are dead, and up to 400 are unaccounted for. Now, they may have escaped. They may not. We don't know yet. The smell of the smoke has reached San Jose, Oakland, and San Francisco. California Governor Jerry Brown officially declared a state of emergency. And he, Michael Snyder writes at the end of his article, after Harvey, Irma, Las Vegas, and now these California wildfires, we could definitely do with some time to recover. But you're not going to get it. Leviticus 26, verse 16. Just remember this scripture. I also, God, will do this unto you. I will appoint over you terror. Terror. It doesn't matter where you look. You'll be scared to go into a mall to do your shopping. You'll be scared to go and park at the supermarket. You'll be scared to go to a pop concert or a football game, not knowing whether somebody is going to blow it up or shoot, have a shootout. Mass shootings in America are becoming quite common. And then we have Leviticus 26:19. I will break the pride of your power. We all know that scripture well. Well, first of all, with America, the dollar is losing its reserve currency. This is one reason why, the main reason why the Americans went into Iraq, because Iraq was threatening to stop using the dollar, and the Americans didn't like that, and that's why they went after Saddam Hussein. Well, unfortunately, that gained momentum, and Russia, China, India, and quite a few other countries in the Middle East now are quite happy to sell oil for gold or at a fair exchange rate between their respective currencies. That's going to cost America $150 billion in lost revenue every year. And what about America suffering a military disaster? Deuteronomy 32, verse 25. The sword without and terror within shall destroy both the young man and the virgin, the suckling, also the man with the gray hairs, the old and infirm. The sword without. And then you go down to Leviticus, back to Leviticus 26, verse 37. And they shall fall one upon another, as it were before a sword, and none pursueth, and you shall have no power to stand before your enemies. You know, when Europe eventually takes over America, at the end, there's nothing in the Bible to suggest that there's any retaliation at all. Or from Britain. Think about it. And the reason why? Well, we're not obeying God, but I mean it's on a physical human level, is Isaiah 3 and verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. There's where the problem comes. When something's wrong on the ship, you don't go fire the cook. You go to the bridge. That's where the problem's coming from. Man can no longer cope. The problems are too immense. How do you pay back $20 trillion? Not possible. The only way you can do it is to devalue, deface your currency, which we've done over the centuries. The Romans did it. Started off with gold coins, ended up with brass things with holes in the middle. Worthless. Europe. What have we got time-wise here? Let's see. Germany is the leading trading nation in Europe. No question about that. But it's in the world as well. And it's right up there, as I said, with the USA and China. Germany is moving to the right politically. Mrs. Merkel let in around about 1 million young Muslim males. Now, Mrs. Merkel has been in charge of Germany for the last 15 years. Mrs. Merkel is one cool cookie. She knows how things happen. She knows how to control things. She's taken Germany, she got a united Germany and got it all back on its feet. This lady makes things happen, right? Why did she allow 1 million people to come in the country? To stir up the right wing, maybe? It's got to happen. We know that's going to happen, you see. And we look for the causes. Is this the cause? Germany, over the last couple of years, is rearming at an incredible rate. They're employing, getting more people into the armed forces. They're going to bring back conscription. Doesn't the warning bells ring in the West? Oh, no, Germany's our ally. Unlike other nations, Germany manufactures virtually all of its weaponry, all of its guns, all of its ammunition, all of its tanks. They don't hive it off, you know. They don't get China to build a mainframe of one of their fighter jets, as the Americans, I believe, do. I saw in one report whether it's true or not, I don't know. They do it all in-house. And they've been one of the biggest arms suppliers in the world. Getting ready. And the word comes, now it's all for us, guys. Shut the exports, and we make it for our own use. Germany is now seeking a more active role in the world, politically. And they've got an armed force to back that up. Now, there's a new Europe coming, a 10-nation Europe, Revelation 17:2. We know these nations give their power to the beast. This world power is described in Revelation 13:4, and it says, think about this. In this world today, who is like the beast? Who can make war with him? Who would dare to raise a finger against this nation, this Europe, this resurrected Holy Roman Empire? Well, for that to happen, surely the other big nations have got to be brought down a bit. So are we going to see some sort of catastrophes? No, watch the space. We know that in the Pastor General's report, I mentioned very many, many times, at the 30 and 35 day mark, our work will be ended. It says, this will be the time when the united Europe shall appear. That appears and we disappear. Too sweet. And 45 days later, the beast's army surrounds Jerusalem. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation starts. Probably the nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after on the United States and Canadian cities. Not even forgetting Canada. There you go. Israel, basically. Modern-day Israel. Ancient Israel, rather. The modern-day nations of ancient Israel. They'll all be taken over. They'll all be taken over. And quickly, the world finance is pretty close to collapse. It's all fiat currency. There's no value. There's no real value anywhere. Everybody knows it. They're just keeping the confidence up so that we can keep a system going. But this could well be a catalyst that brings about the changes in the power structure of the world. Mr. Wolfgang Schäuble, who was the finance minister in Germany for many, many years, has just been promoted now to president. He's getting on in years, and he's now been made the president. Warns that economists all over the world are concerned about the increased risks arriving from the accumulation of more and more liquidity and the growth of public and private debt. And I myself am concerned also, he said. In other words, you keep printing money, you put more and more money into the system, worthless paper money, and people spend it. And worst of all, they can borrow it cheap, so they borrow more and more. They get more and more and more in debt. Then they can't pay it back, and the bank collapses because it can't get its money back. Many experts are predicting a massive financial collapse. Many experts are predicting a huge stock market collapse. Mr. Armstrong warned us some years ago, didn't he? Some 30 years ago. He says, I can see now the event that was going to trigger the formation of the reunification of Europe. It's going to happen out of a clear blue sky. And he says, I think you're going to see it's the economic situation in the world. And he mentions now when this financial structure breaks down, and by that, totally breaks down, bringing up a new currency, which will undoubtedly be backed by gold, and work out who's got all the gold today. When the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. I just wanted to say that much. Maybe you can begin to see how serious this thing can become. Christ inspired him to say that over 30 years ago. We're here now. So, in conclusion, let me turn to Isaiah 32. Because we've had a feast that seems to be pretty much dominated on the theme of teaching, doesn't it? And our future, and our future role. Isaiah 32, verse 13. Upon the land of my people shall come up thorns and briars, yea, all the houses of joy in the joyous city, because the palaces shall be forsaken, the multitude of the city shall be cut off, the forts and the towers shall be dense forever, the joy of wild asses and pasture of flocks. Our nations are going to be totally destroyed, totally destroyed, until, verse 15, until the Spirit be poured out upon us from Most High, and the wilderness be a fruitful field, and the fruitful field be counted as a forest. Then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness, and righteousness remain in the fruitful field. And the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness quietness and assurance forever. People won't have any of the worries that we've got, or the people today have got. They should not be our worries. They should not be our worries. We should be looking for these things to actually happen. Now, our job, our future job, once that Spirit is poured out, it's going to be to help the people and guide them. But we can have work to do, you know. If you turn to Isaiah 41, it's a scripture that came up a couple of times during the feast. Isaiah 41, because the family of God will make it happen, you see. We're not going to be just sitting there directing the people. We're going to be actively involved. First of all, we're going to recreate all the animals. We're going to recreate all the seeds, all the trees, because everything today is totally corrupt. It's all going to be washed away, turned over, buried. It's all, we're going to start from scratch. We're right going back to Genesis 1, basically. Isaiah 41, verse 19. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia tree, the myrtle, and the olive tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box tree together. I. That might well be us. It's God that's saying it. We'll be the God family. Around this world, we have got to plant billions, if not trillions, of trees. Because trees modify weather. It's part of the process that modifies the weather. And we will ensure that this judgment that it talks about, this judgment, this peace, this contentment, we will be there to bring that about by teaching the people how to attain that, and also to remind them of what they come out of, to remind them what they come out of because of the way they were actually living. Now, if you want the position as a king and a priest and a ruler and a teacher, Christ tells us how. And it's really not complicated. Revelation 3, verse 11. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, and let no man take your crown. I started off with deception. I'm going to end up with deception. Deception in God's church. And it's really, really important we understand this. Christ said in Matthew 24, verse 5, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive the many. There are several scriptures that talk about people within the church getting off disciples after themselves to form their own little flock. I received a message today from a very close friend of mine, in another country, who attended a feast site with another thing, and he said, it's very hard for me to hang on to what Mr. Armstrong taught, but I'm doing that. I'm doing that. But he says, there appears to be an ongoing quest to change doctrines. In the place where he was, he says, the latest is, there are no church eras. All seven churches only arise in the day of the Lord. And Satan and the demons will be executed. This is the kind of rubbish that's being promulgated in the churches of God. Deception? You better believe it, and you better be careful. When people start spouting new ideas to you, pull the blind down. Just tell them where they can put them in their back page. We don't want them. We don't want new ideas. In fact, the Bible says, seek after the old ways. Yeah? Seek after the old ways. We've got to watch and pray. And earnestly contend for that gospel that was once and for all delivered to the saints. If it doesn't tie in with what Mr. Armstrong gave us, Jesus Christ gave us the outline through Mr. Armstrong, then bin it. Don't even let it stick around in your mind. We're going to execute all the angels. What did Mr. Bowles mention in his sermon the other day about the meaning of the day? He said that we're going to judge the angels. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to be judging an angel, is it judging him just to condemn him and execute him, send him into outer darkness or whatever? Isn't there a thing here that some of those angels may come right? Maybe, who knows? But we certainly can't execute them because they're spirit. But there's a church of God, and this is a big group that he's with, this guy attends with. Big group. That's what they're now preaching. And I say, it's not a tiny group, it's one of the big three. Take your choice. We have to stay on track. No matter what happens, that's what we're going to be doing as a church. We've done it ever since we got together in 2002, since Mr. Bowles was inspired to write that booklet on what and, you know, is an apostle. Once we understand that, there's no other route. Because God says to the apostles, if they believe you, they'll believe me. If they don't believe you, they won't believe me. And they won't believe the one that sent me. There's two places that's mentioned in the New Testament. So that's your answer. We have to stay on track. Then we have to hang on to what Christ has revealed that have been revealed by Jesus Christ to his church by his entire apostle. It's not complicated. We've got a website with a good lot of information on, and I believe in the next year we're going to be making it even better. There'll be more and more stuff going on there, all searchable. Yeah, we're going to put it out there. There'll be no excuse for people. They'll be able to get the original material. And that's what you need. This is the way. It's the only way. And if people don't want to agree with that, you try showing me it some other way. If it didn't come from Jesus Christ, I don't want to know it. And if we do that, then we can qualify to be teachers in the world tomorrow.